Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now is Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. We have a podcast called the On the Bluff Pod. It releases every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. Christian, how you doing, brother?
Doing great, Gabe. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but I'm a little conflicted. I watched some Monday Night Football last night. The late game was at 9 p.m. We had Chargers and Raiders. Chargers end up winning. But I think the big conversation today that everybody's getting into is Tom Brady, who is a minority owner for the Raiders, was in the coach's box with a headset on, and it seemed like he was going back and forth with the staff in there about what needed to be called. Apparently, he is part of game planning during the week, so there is that. But it kind of calls into question what he does for a living at this point with that massive deal he has to call Fox's Game of the Week on a Sunday. What do you make of that? It seems like a very obvious conflict of interest.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. But before, and I definitely want to discuss that, but can we talk about these Monday night doubleheaders?
You hate them?
I'm so done with them, dude. Like, okay, think about this. Obviously, we live in arguably the best time zone when it comes to NFL football, like central time zone.
Sure.
Pretty great for the most part. The first game, the Texans and the Bucks last night started at 6 p.m.
6 p.m., right.
So West Coast, that's 4 o'clock. So how many people are watching a game on the West Coast at 4 o'clock? It's got to be a little more rough. Like
right.
The viewership can't be as good as a typical Monday night game that starts at 7:15. Okay, so that's the first piece of it. Conversely, on the East Coast, that second game, the Chargers and Raiders game, did not start until 10 o'clock Eastern time. And it was tough for me to stay up. Like, knowing I had to be up at 6:30 this morning and go to work, I barely made it to the end of that game. I think it was around midnight.
Yeah, it was late.
So that's 1 o'clock Eastern time. You're probably losing, what, 50, 60% of the audience?
Now, granted, you could with the Chargers Raiders, you could have gone to sleep because, I mean, it could have gone till 5 a.m. and the Raiders weren't going to score.
Yeah, but I did have some
that's beyond the point.
Fantasy implications, that's why I had to
okay,
stay up
I got
that
you.
One. If it wasn't for that, I probably would have went to sleep a little earlier, but I just don't understand the Monday night doubleheader, and like, not to be that guy, because I'm not the biggest fan of critiquing other people at their job. But that second crew is just not good. Like Dan Orlovsky, Lewis
Chris
Riddick.
Fowler. I mean, Chris Fowler, man. It sounded like he was stuffed up. He's sick.
I mean, Chris Fowler is great when it
sure.
comes to college football. He's one of the voices of college football. But he's not. He's never been the biggest NFL guy.
Well, but that's not – I mean, I think that's beyond – like, that. I don't even worry about that. I worry about how much they're working him. I mean, he's had to travel the United States this week.
Hey, Kirk Herbstreit's way worse. Kirk Herbstreit is –
sure. That's I get you, but Chris Fowler had a tough week this week.
100%.
We can admit that.
100%. And also, a three-man booth is – odd to me. It never really works. And I'm just not the biggest fan of that announced team. You know, like Dan Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick, I don't know what it is, but even when they, I don't know how many people remember this, but that used to be the Monday night main crew a few
right.
years back. Those, I think it was those three. I think it was Chris Fowler also. Like that, after after Gruden went back to coaching, that was the Monday Night Football crew. I wasn't a fan of them then. And now you kind of put them in a terrible position also because you're asking them to cover a game. And they can't have good chemistry, the three of them together. It's not like they do it every week. So you're kind of putting them in a bad spot. So the announced team isn't great. It's super late. I'm not a fan. I would rather there be a Friday NFL game than a Monday night doubleheader.
And then just in general, you have ABC and ESPN for the first game, and then ESPN strictly for the second game. So you have to decide by the end of the first game whether you're going to switch to the other one or stay with the 6 o'clock game. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I like one
7:15, 7:20 start on a Monday night. I agree with you on all of this.
Yeah, unless you have two 65-inch TVs in the living room like my roommate and I do. But
okay, well, you don't have to choose then.
No, we don't. Let's talk about the Tom Brady stuff that showed it on the broadcast last night. I think,
and then the NFL tweeted about it
like it's a cool thing.
Yeah, they ended up deleting the tweet, though, which I find hilarious.
Yeah, and I think it was Chris Fowler who said, you know, he talks to Chip Kelly, the Raiders offensive coordinator, 2 to 3 times a week about game plan and stuff like that. And so, obviously, he is much more intimately involved with the Raiders organization than most minority owners are. So that's one thing. And if that was the end of the story, whatever. I mean, he's a minority owner. He can be as involved as he wants to be and as the coaching staff allows him to be. But he has a monster deal with Fox.
$36 million a year.
Yeah.
For those that don't remember.
A year. More than he ever made in a season in the NFL, I believe.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, per his contract details.
Contract.
But,
based on,
you know,
contract.
The TB12 method, you know.
Yeah.
And New England, there's been a lot of stories written about that.
But this is the reason that you called it a conflict of interest, right? Because if you know anything about announcers and announced teams and what they do in the lead-ups to games, they meet with coaching staffs and players, and they're asking questions that the coaching staff and players would never give the information to, like the media. Like if they're in a media scrum and a media member asks a question, they're not going to give them the same stuff they give an announced team because there's a respect there and there's a discretion there that if I'm going to tell you some things, and they're probably the coaches and players up front are probably going to say, I'm okay with this being said, or I'm not okay with this being said. And because those announcers are good at their job and professionals and enjoy the money that they make, they only put the stuff out there that the coach or player told them that they can say. But when you look at the Tom Brady situation, and actually it's kind of ironic timing because this is the perfect week to discuss it. So Tom Brady and Kevin Burkhardt will be calling the Cowboys and Bears game at 3:30 on Fox this week. So they'll be meeting with, you know, the Cowboys staff and players, and they'll be meeting with the Bears staff and players. And the Bears play the Raiders the next week. So say he's meeting with Ben Johnson, and Ben Johnson is to you know, hint him off on some things or say some things. Brady could then use that and tell Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll some of the things he heard. Now, obviously, I think Ben Johnson is smart enough to understand, look,
sure,
we play the Raiders next week. Tom Brady's a minority owner. We all know now how involved he is behind the scenes. I'm probably going to keep it close to the vest, but – honestly, if I was a head coach in the NFL and
I'd lie to him, to be honest, in those if I'm Ben Johnson, I'm lying.
I think I might take it further than that. I think I might just deny it. I think I might just not meet with them and say, look, if no one's going to call attention to this and do anything about it, I'm just going to deny the interview. I'm not going to do the interview because people have to call attention to the fact that this is a severe conflict of interest. And I'm sure there are ways around it. I'm sure Tom can say, you know, I'm not going to ask this, I'm not going to ask that, and I'm going to be respectful of my position and their position. And we're just going to talk about personal stuff and kind of surface level stuff that's not going to give anything away. But still, it is the definition of a conflict of interest. And I guess I don't understand how it hasn't been bigger of a talking point until what was said on Monday Night Football.
Now, I will say, he must have not known much about the Chargers, because that wasn't much of a game.
Yeah, if he got any nuggets from the Chargers coaching staff, they were not able to use them. And I'm extremely impressed by the Chargers. I think we all know Jim Harbaugh is a great coach.
Sure.
He was for the 49ers. He was at Michigan where he won a national championship. And it looks like he's kind of done the Jim Harbaugh thing once again and gone into an organization and completely changed the culture. Because what have we known the Chargers as literally since the Phillip Rivers days? Like, it has transcended coaching staffs for the Chargers, whether they were in San Diego or L.A. or who was coaching the team or who was the quarterback of the team. The Chargers have consistently been known as just a choke team. Like, they just allow teams to hang in there and come back and win games or make it more competitive than it should be. And I think Jim Harbaugh has clearly changed the culture. And it was good last year, but they're on a different level this year. You know,
right.
Year with Jim Harbaugh, second year with Jesse Minter as the defensive coordinator. And you look at this defense, and I was doing it last night as I was watching the game, and they did like the – it's not the player intros like it is on Sunday Night Football, but they show all the starters on the screen and everything. And you're looking at that defense and going, it's a pretty unheralded
right.
group of guys.
Besides like, Derwin James, he's the only name that everyone would know.
And Khalil Mack.
Well, yeah, but he's old. At this point.
Yeah, but still, those are the only guys with name value. Outside of them, you go, who are these guys? But they play so well together. Tyre Tart in the middle is a great run stopper. Deion Henley, who had an interception on the first play of the game last night, he's a budding superstar at linebacker. Tarheeb Steele, who was a late-round rookie last year, has been really good. And it's just an example of how important coaching is, because is that the most talented defense in the league?
Not
absolutely not. But are there many defenses that play as well together as they do and understand their assignments and do the things that they're supposed to? No, they're a very disciplined group, and they're always in the right positions. And then offensively, it's been weird to see the run game not very effective for the Chargers, because we know that's what Harbaugh and Greg Roman are known for. But Amarian Hampton struggled. Najee Harris still working his way back from the firework incident on the 4th of July, getting up to speed because he missed most of training camp. But they've really kind of went against the Greg Roman philosophy and really turned the reins over to Justin Herbert. He's obviously healthy this year, and he wasn't last year. It's year two in this system, so he's more comfortable. He's got a great cast of receivers with Keenan Allen and Quentin Johnson. Looks like he might finally be coming on, and Ladd McConkey. And it's just I don't know if it's surprising because it's Jim Harbaugh, but it's just it just shows you how important coaches are, that he can continually go into these teams and programs, whether it's at the collegiate level or the professional level, and completely turn them around.
Right. Now, I know how good Justin Herbert has been to this point, but it hasn't been as consistent as it looks so far this season. Are we seeing like the full-on breakthrough? In your opinion, I know it's two games. It's hard to really get a feel for that. But, you know, he's third in yards. I believe he's top five in touchdowns. Hasn't thrown a pick. Like, where are we at on Justin Herbert in that full breakthrough this year? Beat the Chiefs game one, handle business easily game two, without, you know, really any drama.
Yeah, I think – Justin Herbert's so difficult to tab, right? Because he is clearly one of the top five most talented quarterbacks in the league. He hasn't broken into the top five as a top five quarterback yet, but talent-wise, probably top three.
Right.
I mean, there's not many that have the intangibles that Justin Herbert does. Not only is he 6'6", but he can move. I think they said he hit 21 miles per hour last week on that scramble to close the game against the Chiefs. He's got a cannon for an arm. But there's always been something where you go, he's really good, but he's not elite. And last year, it was kind of the same, right? It was different than we had seen in the past. Typically, he was a high-volume quarterback, throwing the ball a ton, high 4,000 and 5,000-yard passing seasons and just slinging the ball all over the place, but not really the guy that late in the fourth quarter you're terrified of. And last year, it looked like a Greg Roman offense, right? They ran the ball with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. They kept it pretty short. It was a lot of Ladd McConkey over the middle. 10 yard and in routes, not a lot of shots down the field. And he didn't make, he didn't have the turnovers because of that. I think he threw three or four, maybe two, maybe it was two interceptions. It was the least in the league for a starting quarterback.
Right.
So he was, I don't even know if efficient is the right word, but he didn't make mistakes last year, and they didn't really uncork
until
him. This year. Yeah, until the playoff game.
Until that wild card game where he threw four. But
yeah, and this year, it's like, look, Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman are saying, we have one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and we are going to allow him to be the leader of this offense and of this team, and we're going to go as Justin Herbert goes, not as the run game goes, because we trust him to make the right decisions and to move the ball and to score touchdowns. And I know it's two games, but I would say if it's going to happen for Justin Herbert, if he's going to break into the status of being an elite quarterback, then this is the year, because he looks fully in control. He looks extremely comfortable. They were talking about it on the broadcast last night, how he had told them that he feels more comfortable in the system. It's very wordy. There's a lot of different things going on with this offense, and he feels under command. He looks extremely confident in the pocket. He knows when to hang in there and make the throw. He knows when to take off and use his athletic ability and mobility to either stay ahead of the chains or pick up a timely first down. Like, he just looks more confident and more comfortable than he ever has. And he also, on top of that, has the best group of weapons that he's ever had. So if it's going to be an MVP caliber, jumping into elite status, you know, stamping himself as one of those guys, like, this is the year. And at least right now, two games in, I would feel pretty confident that he's going to jump into elite status by the end of the season.
Now, the team that the Chargers beat week one, the Chiefs, have lost both their games to start the year. They're 0-2. Now, granted, it's against the Chargers and then the Eagles, the reigning Super Bowl champs, but 2 one-score losses. Last year, they were 11-0 in one-score games. This year, they're 0-2. Like, do you look at this and just say, okay, Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice, they get back on the field, they get back healthy, this team's going to click on all cylinders, they'll be around at the end? Or do you feel differently about this Chiefs team at this point? Because I've talked to you about this on multiple occasions. If Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs team are able to break through and win another Super Bowl here in the next couple of years, or this year, they're breaking a trend in the modern era that only Tom Brady was able to break. Right.
Well, I know you have said this to me a couple times, and the more that I've kind of thought about it, they've already broken that mold, in my opinion. Like, this has been 7 years. You don't have teams that go to 7 consecutive AFC championship games. They've already broken the mold.
But when we talk about Super Bowls and amount of years, I mean, this is 3-5 where you have, I mean, you look at Joe Montana, it was 4-8. You look at Troy Aikman, 3-4. You look at Ben Roethlisberger, 2-4. You look at Steve Young, it was like 3-6. So it's like it's different. The only guy that won 7-19, went 10 years off, and then went back and then won it with another team, that's Tom Brady.
Yeah, no, 100% as far as just the longevity of it. But I think this is already, and this is totally opinion-based, but to me this is already the second greatest dynasty we've ever seen behind the Patriots. Like, it just, this level has not been reached other than the Patriots.
But either way, they're 0-2, the Chiefs are, for the first time in the Mahomes era, 0-2 for the first time since 2014. In 2014, when they were 0-2, they missed the playoffs altogether. And there's only been, I think, 3 teams that have won the Super Bowl after starting 0-2.
Yeah, I mean, am I concerned? Surface level, no, because I do agree with what I'm kind of on the side of what you said as far as Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice, this offense is going to look completely different when they get those things. And I do believe that to an extent, but then I look at some of the other things and go, okay, the passing game will be better with Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. Everyone can agree on that. That's 100% objective. You get 2 really good receivers back, the offense is going to be better. But does it open up the running game, right? Because they have not run the ball effectively at all. Patrick Mahomes is by far their rushing leader right now. So is it a product of teams aren't scared of the receivers that are out there, which you can't blame them? Hollywood Brown, Tyquan Thornton, Juju Smith-Schuster, they're not striking fear into anybody. I feel like most teams feel like they can guard those guys one-on-one and load the box. So let's say the running game gets figured out when those receivers come back. Defensively, they've been okay. They haven't been great. I mean, you can look at – you can box score watch and say Jalen Hurts only had 101 passing yards, so they must be doing something right. Maybe, but the Eagles look kind of clunky right now too. I know the Eagles are a really talented team. I'm not as sold on them as other people right now. You look at all the power rankings, they're number one or number two.
It's the same question I have every year about them. Is Jalen Hurts ever going to throw it out of his own shadow, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
But he also, it's kind of funny when you look back at the stats, he does create a lot more chunk plays than most quarterbacks through the air by the time the season's over with. Are they going to be able to do that, though, this year?
Right. So, but to me, the concern with the Chiefs isn't can they do – I mean, I fully believe they can do it. Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, you know, Rashee Rice, Chris Jones, like when they have their full cast of stars, I think they'll still be one of the top five or six teams in the league. The only concern that I have is the way that it's looked as far as emotions. You look at Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce has had meltdowns in the first two games, and I understand passion. I understand being fired up, but it just doesn't feel like good times in Kansas City, right? And we kind of saw this last year, too. I just think it was so frustrating with the lack of big plays and with the lack of scoring that the offense had that there was some frustration. And we're seeing it even more this year so far. So, you know, winning cures all if they are able to get their guys back and the offense is able to pick things up. Everything will be okay. So I'm not counting them out yet. We saw this happen with Brady and the Patriots multiple times later in his career where they started the season off with a loss or two, and everybody was ready to write Tom Brady's eulogy and say it's over, it's done, he's hit the cliff. And they're not saying that with Mahomes. I don't think anybody's thinking he's hit a cliff already. But they're thinking the dynasty's over, it's done. This team, they can't do it.
Right.
And they've just proven too many times that they can. People were saying this last year.
Well, but and can I be honest, Christian? Here's the only issue I have. And, you know, you stand on one side of the Mahomes-Brady conversation. I stand on the other side. Like, when you start the conversation by saying, well, I saw Brady do this. Like, that's, for me, a bit of an issue. Because, like, I'm not quite there. I'm not quite there where I'm just going to immediately throw Patrick Mahomes in that same exact bucket. I need to see, by the time his career is over, more Super Bowls. I need to see more great seasons. I need to see more 5,000-yard passing seasons. I get where people hold that opinion. I'm not quite on that level with Patrick Mahomes yet, as weird as that may sound to some.
No, you can't throw him in the same conversation as Brady, right? I mean, Brady did it for so long, multiple different teams. Like, you can't say that he's going to do it because Brady did it. I mean, that's honestly not fair to Tom Brady. Tom Brady's too good to put anybody else right there next to him. But I'm really using last year as the example for this. And I know they won 11 one-score games. I know that's not going to happen. Again, they've already lost two of them. Like, that just is unsustainable. But the fact of the matter is they didn't look like a very good team last year. I mean, they escaped against a lot of bad teams and were able to pull it off. And everybody said, okay, once they run into Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and these caliber of teams, they're not going to be able to do it. And they still went to the Super Bowl. Now, albeit they got crushed by a better overall team in the Eagles, but I don't know what's stopping people from saying, look, they did it last year, and honestly, the offense should be better this year. They had, two or three weeks of Rashee Rice last year, so if they get 10, 11 games out of Rashee Rice and 13, 14 games out of Xavier Worthy, depending on how much time he misses, like, I just don't see a world where this offense is worse than last year, and I don't think the defense is much further off from where it was last year either. So I think eventually the ship gets corrected. They get the Giants on Sunday Night Football this week, and I've heard some people say, well, if they blow them out, then it's just the Chiefs and they'll be fine, but if it's a close game, we should be worried. I'm just going to be honest, it's probably going to be a close game. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if it's a close game. We don't know the status of Xavier Worthy. It's still five more weeks until Rashee Rice. I think it's going to look ugly for a while, And we'll just have to see when they have everyone what it looks like.
Talking with Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media on X at CFowlerBCM. All right, I waited this long to talk about it. Tigers this weekend in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium against the Arkansas Razorbacks. Let me know the keys to the Tigers winning that game. Now, I want to drop a couple of trends in this sort of golden era, the University of Memphis and the football program since 2014. This game, of course, is going to be on ABC at 11 a.m. Since 2014, the Tigers are 4-0 in games that are on ABC at 11 a.m. They're also 5-0 at home against power conference opponents. So, like, they have some trends that seem good, but we know that those trends don't necessarily apply to this one-off game against Arkansas. What do the Tigers need to do to win?
First and foremost, the biggest thing, and anyone that tries to deviate from this point and put something else ahead of it, I think is just trying to be different than everyone else, which is respectable. But the biggest thing is containing Taylen Green.
Yep.
Like that is number
one.
He is an elite athlete with an elite arm. And if you let him get started running the ball and moving out of the pocket and improvising and making plays, I don't think Memphis has a chance in this game. They're going to have a detailed game plan to keep him in the pocket and to make him uncomfortable and get pressure in his face. Because if he's able to break contain and get outside and use his legs, like, Memphis is going to be guessing the entire game at what he's going to do. And it's just going to look discombobulated. So that's number one, is you have to have a very detailed game plan for Taylen Green that will work, because we talked about this on the podcast last night. Taylen Green has always shown flashes going back to his time at Boise State, but he's always been prone to make mistakes and not come up in the big moments. But this year so far, he's played relatively clean, only two interceptions this year. I think he's been more decisive on his running rather than just taking off immediately when pressure gets back there. He's been keeping his eyes downfield more and using that to his advantage. But he's too gifted of a runner and also too talented of a passer to just allow him to have his way. So to me, that first and foremost, you're not going to stop him. I mean, he's going to make plays with his legs. He's too good not to. But you can't let him beat you with his legs. You can't let him rip off 30 and 40-yard gains or consistently get first downs with his legs. They're going to have to make him uncomfortable. They're going to have to make him second guess what he's seeing, whether that's exotic coverage looks or exotic blitzes, whatever that case may be. I don't know exactly what Jordan Hankins is going to dial up, but it's going to have to be a really good game plan to make him uncomfortable and to make him make some mistakes.
Yep. And then beyond that, what are we talking about offensively for the University of Memphis? I know everybody through these first three games has talked about how vanilla the offense has looked. Is it as simple as to say, okay, open it up? Let's see this passing game with Brennan Lewis. See if you can create more chunk plays against a better defense, an SEC caliber defense.
Yeah, that's all it is to me, is stretching the field. Because if you can't, if you're not able to hit the downfield shots, which we have seen some good shot plays from this team, whether it be Jamari Hawkins or Cortez Braham, like, we've seen them take some shots and have some effective throws down the field. But when I look at it as a whole, I go, okay, if they are not threatened or not scared by this receiving core and they sit in cover one all game and they load the box, they're going to make you throw it. Like, you're not going to be able to use Sutton Smith. You're not going to be able to use Frank Pizant. And that's what Memphis wants to do at the end of the day. They want to run the ball. They want to use Brennan Lewis's legs. They want to use the running attack. But to get Arkansas to respect it and not load the box all game, Brennan Lewis is going to have to show that he can throw the ball in one-on-one coverage and make tight window throws. And Memphis's receivers are going to have to prove that they can actually beat one-on-one coverage, get down the field, and allow Memphis to get some chunk plays to back those linebackers and those safeties up. So to me, it really is as simple as that. You have to stretch the field. You have to make them respect Brennan Lewis and his arm and these wide receivers. And if they do that, then they should be able to have success running the ball, which completely opens this offense up. And much like we're talking about with with Taylen Green and his legs, then Brendan Lewis can make them pay and extend plays and get chunk gains with his legs, which puts Arkansas's defense in a bind.
Yeah, and I have said this, and I've probably overdone it a bit so far. I said the Tigers need to be plus two in the turnover battle. But just win the turnover battle, I think you give yourself an opportunity. And that goes hand-in-hand with what you said earlier about Taylen Green. He's a very good player. It feels like he's taken a step this year. But he has been. When you speed up his internal clock and make him decide if he's going to run or throw the ball, force a ball into a tight window, if you speed up his internal clock, he's been prone to mistakes in the past.
Yeah, and that's what Memphis has done in these power conference games that they've won, right? They've gotten out the fast starts. The Ole Miss game, I always go back to that game. I think it was the first game of the season against Ole Miss.
And 2019, the Cotton Bowl year.
Yeah, 2019, and they just got after Ole Miss early, made them uncomfortable, forced negative plays, forced turnovers, and that gives a team that is coming into the game as an underdog, which Memphis isn't a heavy underdog in this game, only 7.5 last time I saw. So what does that tell you? 7.5-point underdog, you just have to steal a possession or two, like you're saying, win the turnover battle and capitalize on it, and if you can – get the crowd in it early. If you can bring that energy, because we know 11 o'clock games sometimes struggle with that. If you can force a turnover early or, you know, get one of those early stops where you're getting a sack and some negative plays and go down the field and score and start the game out with a lead, then your crowd's in it from the beginning, your team's right in it from the beginning. And we talk about this all the time. When there's
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A belief from a team, especially from the jump of a game, that typically stays around. And in those big moments when you need a fourth down conversion on offense or you need a big stop on defense, like that belief is there. So it's starting fast, getting the turnover, scoring early and getting out in front, like all those things are key recipes to the upsets that Memphis has had against power conference teams in the past, and it's not going to be any different on Saturday.
Yep, we will see. We'll see coming up on Saturday. But, Christian, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining. We'll do it again next week.
Yes, sir. See y'all back next week.
Yes, sir. He is Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Make sure you go check out our podcast, the On the Bluff podcast, on the Bluff City Media podcast network, and Believe releases every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. Make sure you go check that out. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll come back with the Blitz. And in the Blitz today, we have Dabo Swinney at 1-2. Clemson is 1-2 so far this year after being a top five team in the preseason AP poll. He sent a very pointed message to his fans and haters. Let's talk about that next.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Gabe, Dabo Swinney stepped up to a podium today, and he had a lot to say. I'll just play it so everybody can hear it.
If they want me gone, if they tired of winning, they can send me on the way, because that's all we've done is win. So if they tired of winning, we've won this league 8 out of the last 10 years. Is that not good? I'm just asking, is that good? I don't know if that's good or not. To win your league 8 out of 10 years, to go to the playoffs 7 out of 10 years, to be in 4 national championships, win it twice. Yeah, we're a little down right now, take your shots, but I got a long memory in case y'all don't know. We'll be all right, we'll bounce back. This is a program built to last, always has been. always will be. And I would just say if you give up on us after, if you don't believe on us because we've lost two games down to the last straight and we're one, you didn't believe in us anyway, so it don't matter. You wasn't all in anyway. If you're all in, you burn the ships, man. There ain't no exit strategy. Like, you're freaking all in. And hey, listen, I mean, if Clemson's tired of winning, they send me on my way, but I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. Y'all going to have to deal with me for a while. I got a long way to go. I'm just getting going. I'm just now good enough to be a head coach.
Oh, okay. Connor, can we classify this as a full crash out?
It's close.
It's really close.
It's real close.
He had a calm tone of voice.
Well, the video is nuts.
But it's just like, buddy, what you're saying there is a bit wild to me. There was one part in the middle there, if you caught it, that really, really got me. He said, if you don't believe in us after two losses, you never believed in us. Well, I disagree with that wholeheartedly.
Most people thought they were going to win the ACC.
I think if people knew that you were going to lose those two games, there wouldn't be outrage, Dabo.
Correct.
People wouldn't lose their mind. The reason people are angry is because you were top five in the AP preseason poll, and you lost two games that no one expected you to lose. So their expectations were here, and you have completely gone what you've gone eons below what their expectation was for a fourth-year returning quarterback, for a defensive line that's supposed to be the best in college football, for an offensive line that's returning a bunch of starters, for a wide receiver in skill positions that are coming back and look to be the best that you've had in a while. Like, I disagree with that sentiment wholeheartedly. If they didn't have expectations, then they wouldn't be frustrated with these two losses, but they did. They believed in you, and you've let them down, and that happens sometimes as a college football coach. And I don't. Every time this happens to him, this has happened a couple of times. Remember Tyler from Spartanburg going after him, you know, doing that whole thing a couple of years ago when they won 9 games. I think it was first year Cade Klubnik was a full-time starter. He always does this. He, like, blames the expectations that he's created on fans. And it's like, I know they're spoiled. I get that part of it. That's what happens. But, like, there's certain things about human nature and fandom that you have to acknowledge and just accept. Like, Kirby Smart doesn't spend his time bitching and moaning about the expectations he has at Georgia. Nick Saban knew not to ever do that because he understood, I have these expectations for myself. When I come below them, I am just as mad as you are about not reaching the expectations I had set for this team. But Dabo always takes this different it's a different strategy for him where instead of looking inward and saying, what can I do better? How can I, for the rest of the season, reach the expectations that are ultimately set here? He just blames the fans and talks about how spoiled they are. And I just think that's an insane strategy, Connor. I can't be the only one. I find that's not how, and he is a high-level college football coach. Like, truthfully, if I'm being honest with myself, he really is on a short list of one of the all-time greats because he's won two titles, he's been to four national titles, he got Clemson over the hump. All those stats he brought up, 8 of 10 years, he's won the ACC title. Like, he has done some unbelievable things, and I don't want to minimize that. But to not understand human nature and how fans react, it's just strange to me. He's been in the game too long to continually be this petulant child every time he loses a few games in the early season and his fans have complaints. That's what fans do. You get what I'm saying, Connor? That's why I always get bothered by Dabo.
I'm always bothered by Dabo. I've always been bothered by Dabo because he does things like this. Do you know how much his resume and what Clemson have done in the past matters this year?
To this year, zero.
It's like a fart in the wind. It has zero to no impact.
Ask Nick Saban about it. Ask Kirby Smart about it. They'd say the same things.
It does not matter. This reminds me of, you know, they say, like, a bad parent, whenever you criticize one thing that they did, they're like, oh, so have I not fed you and put a roof over your house? Are you calling me a bad mother or a bad father?
I'm just the worst parent ever.
I guess I'm just the worst ever. Dab, shut the hell up. You're, people picked you to win the ACC. People picked you to potentially win the national championship. You were a top five team. Stop acting like these expectations came out of nowhere and that nobody ever believed in you. This is why people are annoyed by Dabo. When one thing goes wrong, he starts blaming everybody around him, but won't look inward and never accepts responsibility of, I don't know, Dabo, maybe, just maybe, you should go into the transfer portal a little
bit.
Maybe, just maybe, well, look at your quarterback who hasn't been able to get it done.
Maybe, just maybe, your
team hasn't been disciplined in moments.
He's a very successful coach, and, like, I don't think any of us deny that. But, like, his mentality, it's honestly insane that he's gotten to the point he has with this mentality.
It's silly.
Because this is not, to me, how successful people act when they meet some type of, you know, issues in their life, in their livelihood. Just to blame and point fingers at everybody else for the expectations that were created. Oh, you guys never believed.
Oh, you want to criticize me? I'm going to go somewhere else. Yeah. I'm going to leave.
By the way, that was insane.
It's just straight up manipulation tactics by Dabo.
That was insane.
Ridiculous.
Man. That was insane.
Acting like a grown baby.
I think your comparison about, like, the narcissistic parent is, like, perfect. Because that is exactly the card he's playing. Well, I guess I'm just the worst ever, huh? It's like, I never said that. I just said you made a couple of bad decisions and you're not holding up your end of the bargain right now. You have a chance to change that. Change that. Instead of acknowledging that and bringing that to the press and to his fans, he takes this completely different route of, I just guessed I'm the worst college football coach ever, aren't I? I can go elsewhere.
I guess you just hate me. I guess you just hate me.
Yeah, it's like, what? My God. It is.
Why don't you act like a man?
With this mentality he shows time and time again, it really is. It feels like a miracle. He's been able to be as successful as he's been. Because, like, I look at the best coaches we've seen in college football history and the recent ones, too, like a Kirby Smart, a Nick Saban. They would never, ever, ever do this. If they started 1-2, you know what they'd do at a presser? They'd say, we got to be better. You guys deserve better. This isn't acceptable. But Dabo just completely goes 180 against that. It is strange, and it's just, to me, it is a miracle that he has been as successful as he has, if this is truly how he feels on the inside.
Well, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. He had two generational talents at quarterback in college football. That's why he was successful.
Sure, and generational talents everywhere else on the field, but
sure.
I just full-on crash out is the way I would term that. To threaten, hey, if they want to get rid of me, get rid of me.
I'm going to go somewhere else.
And basically at the end, without saying it, he said, I'll haunt you from wherever I coach next. Like, damn, brother. Oh, my gosh.
Just beat Troy by 2 touchdowns.
Beat Georgia Tech. That was never that much to ask. There's never that much to ask, but you can't do that. Okay. All right. That's your strategy, Dabo. We'll see how it works out for you the rest of the year.
Just a full-on dork. Yeah! Potential penalties for Clippers and Kawhi Leonard in the circumvention case from The Athletic. Leonard punishments void his contract to prohibit him from re-signing with the Clippers, require him to return the money he received from Aspiration in a fine up to $350,000. The Clippers and personnel punishments fine the Clippers up to $7.5 million, forfeit draft picks, and suspend Ballmer or other team personnel for up to a year and fine them up to $1 million each.
I know we've been all over the story. I just have one question to you, Connor. What are the chances any of this happens?
I think there's like a 65% chance.
I think we've gotten closer with everything that Pablo Torre has put out little by little.
Every time new info comes out, I think that we get closer.
I feel differently than I did originally when Pablo Torre did the original thing, like his original podcast exposing this stuff. But I still have my doubts. And I hate that I have my doubts, because if they don't actually hand down punishments, I think it's sort of an indication that it should be free game for anybody else in the league to do it. I mentioned that on Friday, but it's just hard for me to believe that Adam Silver is going to be heavy-handed to Steve Ballmer, who he picked to take over the Clippers after the Donald Sterling situation. But that's just It's just how I feel. We'll see.
We'll see. Kawhi Leonard, free agent, Memphis Grizzlies?
Huh?
You're telling me there's a chance.
Maybe. Well, how much money does he want, and is he going to try to do some Uncle Dennis deals with the Grizzlies? We need to stay away from that. Because if the Grizzlies did something like this, they'd get the death penalty. They'd move them to Nashville, like, immediately. But, yeah, there's that. Now, I do need to mention, college football is here, and just as always here in the South, we are excited. We're happy that it's back, but we're rolling right along. And every single Saturday, make sure you go enjoy all of the college football action at Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. They have wall-to-wall screens, 20 high-definition TV screens to be exact. They can tune any TV to whatever you would like, and it can be front and center. Fans will be locked in. Seating is very comfortable, more comfortable than what you have in the living room. Very plush, beautiful recliners and seating. But whether you're all in on your favorite team or just love the thrill of big matchups in college football.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the spot to feel every play, every score, and every win. You grab a seat, you catch the games. You can place an order from their game day menu. They have nachos and things like that, but you can also get a burger from Guy Fieri's restaurant right there around the corner, and they will deliver it right to your seat. It's simply game day done right, folks. Whoever you're rooting for, watch the game in covered in style at Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. Enjoy full-service sports betting experience. It's complete with in-game wagering, staff betting windows, and 10 self-betting kiosks, so you're always going to have a chance to lock in the bet of your choice. It's the ultimate in college football viewing experiences. If you want to get into the games and get in on the action, you need to get to Caesars Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. See you on Saturday. You must be 21 or older to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, let's go ahead and rewind when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.